Okay, good evening. We are now, it's the week of Parshat Vayishlach, the Sedra Vayishlach. But the discourse that we're looking at is connected to a different aspect of the Jewish calendar, although indeed it relates to Parshat Vayishlach as well. And this discourse is for the 10th of Kislev. And tonight is the 10th of Kislev, which has a special significance in the Lubavitch calendar.
It's the anniversary of
Go on. Something. In fact, the 9th of Kislev, which was today, Tuesday, has a significance. This relates to the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, the second Rebbe of Chabad. The first Chabad Rebbe was Rabbi Shneur Zalman, who wrote the Tanya, and he passed away in 1813. When he passed away, his son, Rabbi Dov Ber, became Rebbe. And he was born on the 9th of Kislev, 1773. And he was named Dov Ber after the Maggid of Meserich, who was also called Dov Ber, who passed away in 1772. So in 1772, Dov Ber, the second leader of Hasidism, Rabbi Dov Ber, the Maggid of Meserich, passed away. In 1773, Rabbi Shneur Zalman's oldest son was born, and he named him Dov Ber. Hello, Peter. And he named him Dov Ber. In 1826, there was an accusation against Dov Ber. He was now the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, and he lived in the town of Lubavitch. Did you visit Lubavitch when you went to Russia?
No.
And he was there in the town of Lubavitch. He was the one who made Lubavitch he was the first Lubavitch Rebbe to live there, making it the center of Lubavitch. Mm-hmm. And then there was an accusation against him, similar to that against his father before him, accusation from the opponents of Hasidism, a trumped up charge all to do with money that was being sent to the land of Israel. And they said because the money to the land of Israel was under the rule of the Turks, and Turkey and was an enemy of Russia, so he's sending money to the enemy. And a similar thing as happened before with Rabbi Shneur Zalman, with his father. And he, like his father had written a letter, an interesting letter, to the Tsar, who was in charge of his father's case. He wrote a similar letter, it's like a little book, a booklet, to the governor of Minsk, I think it was, who was in charge of his case. And it's a very interesting little book. It's in Hebrew. One can buy it. It's called Bad Kodesh in its modern edition. Bad Kodesh. And it's explaining a kind of a spiritual perspective for this non-Jewish leader about kingship and leadership. And it has a diagram of the Sfirot. It's a very interesting thing. And it was translated from Hebrew into Russian. He wrote it in Hebrew, then it was translated into Russian. A letter exists where he writes to the translator, giving him advice how to translate. And the story goes that on the day that the letter was brought to the governor, I think his name was Chovansky, the day that the letter was brought to Chovansky, I think by Rabbi Dov Ber's daughter, she brought it to the governor's house. And later that day, Rabbi Dov Ber was released from prison. And Whether that was the actual end of the trial at that point, I actually can't remember. But we regard the 10th of Kislev as the Chag HaGeula, as the time when he was released. So whether it was exactly that day or a little while later. However, a year later, he passed away on the 9th of Kislev. So the 9th of Kislev is his birthday and his yahrzeit, and the 10th of Kislev is the Chag HaGeula. Now, he wrote a discourse called Pada B'Shalom Nafshi. And that's among the teachings of the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, called the Mittler Rebbe, Rabbi Dov Ber, the Mittler Rebbe. Incidentally, my doctorate was about the Mittler Rebbe. He was the subject of my doctorate. The concept of self-sacrifice in the writings or in the teachings of Rabbi Dov Ber Shniuri, the Mittler Rebbe. That was my doctrine. So, which was a subject the Rebbe gave me in Yechidut, discussing my academic writings and studies. He suggested that topic. So that's, so that discourse of his, Pada B'Shalom Nafshi, relates to a verse in Psalms we're going to look at, in Tehillim. And through the generations, especially our Rebbe, previous Rebbe as well, they very often said a discourse on the 10th of Kislev, they said a discourse, Pada B'Shalom Nafshi, he redeemed in peace my soul. So let's just have a look at this Tehillim. It's in Tehillim Nunhei, Tehillim 55. Now you notice that it says at the beginning over here, Yom Yud, day 10. The point being that the Tehillim is divided into the days of the month. So there is a system of saying Tehillim that each day we say a few Tehillim, like on average, five. And in the course of a month, one gets to the end of the whole book of the Tehillim, the 150 Tehillim in the book of Tehillim, the Psalms in the Tehillim. So there are various aspects about Tehillim, various customs. One is to say one's own psalm, like the year of one's life. So if one is 50, one says Psalm 51. And if one's 120, you say Psalm 121. You go back to one. The Rebbe actually mentioned that. You go back to one. like the milometer in a car, you know, when it gets to 999,999, goes back to one. So you go back to Psalm 1. So longevity is increasing. And one says Tehillim for one's loved ones, one's wife, children, etc. But also there is the idea of saying the Tehillim, saying the Psalms according to the day of the month. So today is the 10th of the month. So this is quite likely that he was saying the Tehillim on the 10th of the month. Now his father was released from prison. He wrote in a letter that he was released from his father 28 years previous. Yeah, 28 years previously. His father, Rabbi Shneur Zalman, had been put in prison because of the opponents of Hasidism. And he was released, he said, as he read these words, Pada B'Shalom Nafshi. Now, the point is that he was released on a Tuesday. And the Tehillim is also divided up according to the days of the week. So you say the whole Tehillim each week. And it's likely that he was saying the Tehillim for the day of the week. He might have been saying the whole book of Tehillim every day twice. I don't know, you know, but that's what he wrote in his letter. He was released as he was saying the words, Pada B'Shalom Nafshi. God redeemed in peace my soul. And So the Tehillim, this psalm, is all about struggle. Look at verse Dalet. Mikol Oyev, the sound of the enemy. Mipnei Akat Rasha, the oppression of the evildoer. So, Libi Achil Bekibi, my heart is troubled inside me. Eveimot Mavet Naflu Alai, fear of death fell on me. Yes, so it's talking about a problematic situation, as Psalms very often do. This is one of the reasons why Psalms is so meaningful to people through the generations, because it has there's such tension and such suffering that King David, who writes the Psalms, goes through. However, when we go on to the next page, it somehow changes in mood. In verse 17, Ani el Elokim ekra v'Hashem yoshieni, I will call to God and God will save me. Erev avokev atzoraim, evening and morning and afternoon, asicha, I will speak to God. V'hema, I will moan. V'yishma koli, and God hears my voice. Padav v'shalom nafshi, He redeemed in peace my soul. Mikravli, from my enemies, ki v'rabim hayu imadi, because there were many who were with me. Now, so that's the verse, and that's the opening. That's going to be the opening of the discourse. That verse, and the discourse was said like tonight on a Tuesday night, which means the night before Wednesday, all the Yom Dalet. Yud Kislev, the 10th of Kislev, and it was said in 1983, and it's on this verse. It's not a very long discourse, and hopefully we'll get through it, and we'll be able to understand it. Oh, ya, ya, ba, ya, 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 Hayam bam ba ya la ya ya ram ho ya la ram ba ya ya la ram ba yo ba yo ya ya la ram ba ya ba yo ya ya la ram ba ya ba yo ha ya la ram ba ha ya la ram ba yo ya ba ya ba ya la ram ba ha ya ya ba ya bam 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 Ho yamba ho yambam bum Pada b'shalom nafshi mikhavli ki b'rabim hayu imadi. He saved in peace. He redeemed in peace my soul from the enemy, from the battle around me. Because there were many who were with me. V'yadua hadiyuk b'zeh, and it's known the question asked about this in previous Hasidic teachings. Lama diyek lomer kan shehabdiyah hi b'shalom dafka. Why is he saying that the redemption is in peace? Do you have it? Yeah. It's page hey. It's no. No. Thank you. Yeah. Why does it say that the redemption is in peace? If a person is redeemed, okay, so he's free. He's free from the problem. He's conquered his enemies. Achayinian who? But the subject is as follows. Leave out the brackets. Ki hine bederech klal, in general, tchilat habodat ha'adam shitachlit priyato, the beginning of the service of a person of God, which is really the purpose of his creation. Kamaima ani nivreti l'shamesh es koni, as goes the saying of the sages in the Mishnah, I was created to serve my Creator. Very interesting concept. That's the purpose of our creation, to serve our Creator. We might resist that view of the purpose of our existence. You know, we might think, I'm created to have a good time, to be successful, to become famous, to do this, to do that. But in fact, we're created to serve our Creator. We're created in order to do something which Hashem, God, has put us in this world in order to do. And that's why we're created. We've got a task. We've got a task, we've got a shlichut, we've got a mission to accomplish. And in that task, there are all kinds of ups and downs, battles, struggles. Now that task, the beginning of the service of Hashem, he be'ofen shel milchama dafka. In general, as it says here, in general, the beginning of the service of a person is in a way of a battle. Most people confront battles of different kinds in their lives. And there's the beginning of service. Now, whether the beginning of service means in one's youth, you know, there's a sense in which every day there's the beginning of service. That's when you wake up in the morning, that's the beginning. Each day is a new beginning. The beginning of service is a battle. Uchamayma, and as the saying, Nama apumcha balecho. Now this saying is an interesting one. It says in note 5, you see it gives a reference, note 5, see Zohar, and it gives a page in the Zohar. And whenever it says see, it's not so straightforward. You know, if it just gave the reference, Zohar, page so and so, then that would, but see, Zohar, it means it's not. This is a very interesting phrase. There's a pasuk, there's a verse in the Torah, Bezeya tapecha tochal lechem. By the sweat of your brow you will eat bread. So in other words, earning a living is a problematic issue and it's by the sweat of one's brow. Here it puts it a little, it's in Aramaic, but it puts it a little bit more sharply. Nama, nama means bread. Apum charba, By the blade of the sword, lechol, you will eat. So we eat bread not just by the sweat of our brow, but by the blade of a sword as well. So in other words, it's a battle. Now here it doesn't mean physical bread; it's spiritual bread. V'cheinu gam, hu gam seder avoda. This is also the order of service of a person. This is also the order of service of an individual during his life. Like, so at the beginning he said, in general, the beginning of a service of a person. But then he says, in general, during one's life as well. It's always going min hakal el hakaved. One goes from the easier to the more difficult, and then one goes on and on and on, always climbing higher, always a new struggle. K'may Maha Mishnah, as the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avot, ben chamesh shanim lemikra, when one is 5, one studies Mikra, the Torah. Ben eser shanim lemishnah, at the age of 10, one studies the Mishnah. Ben chamesh eschei legemara, at 15, one learns Gemara, and so on. V'rak l'ach lekein, l'ach lezeh, and only later, after this, ba'im el alimud dipnimiyat haTorah, one comes to study the inner dimension of Torah, shezeu inyan ha-shalom shebetorah, which is the concept of peace within Torah. Now, that's a fascinating item. There's a suggestion that Torah, see, you might say that all Torah is peace. It's beautiful. You study Torah, what would one be studying otherwise? Whatever it is that one is doing, whatever kind of job one has, whatever kind of work or study, it's all fascinating. Everything is interesting. Yes, to the alert mind, everything is interesting. It's nuclear science is interesting, and bricklaying is interesting. Whatever it is, there's always a chokhmah, there's a wisdom, there's a something subtle. And Torah is like the most beautiful, beautiful expanse. Suddenly a window is opened on Kedusha, on holiness, and there you have Abaya and Rava, you know, these great sages discussing this and that. However, of course it is beautiful. It's stunning. But you might gradually discover that in fact it's a battleground. Abaya and Rava are arguing together. This one is saying this, and the other one is saying that. And they're arguing about what is the opinion of Hillel versus Rabbi Yehuda, or whoever it might be. So this one says this. In the Mishnah, there are different opinions who are arguing. And in the Gemara, there are different opinions about what each of those different opinions are saying and what they really mean. That's Milchamta shel Torah, the battle of Torah. So Rashi gives an explanation. Tosfot says, what do you mean? It says something else over here. You have to have a different explanation. So therefore, you're learning Gemara in a nice way. You understand. Rashi explains it this way. Tosafot explains it that way. Then you have another explanation by a later scholar. And so this is the battle of Torah. Now, all that is in Nigla of Torah, in the revealed dimension of Torah, which is basically Mishnah, Gemara, and the Rishonim, the early scholars, discussing the Mishnah and the Talmud. In Pnimiyot Torah, in Zohar, in Kabbalistic teachings, in Chassidut, it's not usually a battle between two different opinions. As it says in the Zohar, Leit Taman Lo Kushya, in this realm of the inner dimension of Torah, it's a place of harmony. It's revealing godliness, which in fact harmonizes everything. One can understand that very simply, because on the simple level, let's say you have Chesed on the right and Gvura on the left. Now, if a sage says it's permitted, that's Chesed. Yes, this thing can be done. The object that you're talking about, the activity that you're talking about, can be carried out and can be connected to Hashem. Gvura, severity, says no, it can't. And so it's forbidden. So usually Beit Shammai say it's forbidden and Beit Hillel say it's permitted. And then you have the other opinions, like analyzing their opinions. So you can talk about them as Chesed and Gvura. But when you go higher up to Da'at, which is on a higher level, which combines both Chesed and Gvura, Pnimiyot Torah, the inwardness of Torah, comes from that higher level where all the conflicts are resolved. In fact, Pnimiyot Torah, the inner dimension of Torah, is often called Divrei Elokim Chayim, the words of the living God. Divrei Elokim Chayim. And the way that I understand it, it's partly, at least, it's a quotation of a famous section of the Talmud, where it says, even though this group say it's impure, and this group say it's pure, Elu Osrim, these say it's forbidden, and these say it's permitted, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chayim, both of them are the words of the living God. So in other words, this view and that view, which are the opposite, they nonetheless are both the words of the living God.
Or the living words of the God.
The living divrei Elokim Chayim, you could say that. The living words of God. All right. Okay. So that divrei Elokim Chayim is also the word for Hasidic teachings. In fact, there's a Rosh Tevot. Divrei Elokim Chayim. How would you pronounce that?
Dach.
Now Dach is Divrei Chassidut. So the, you know, the language and references back to Talmudic quotations, so there is this point, the inner dimension of Torah is on a higher level where there is not the same kind of conflict. It's revealing radiance. Now, so in other words, what this is saying, what it said so far, quoting from Pirkei Avot, when you're 5 years old, you learn Mikra, you learn Chumash. 10 years old, you learn Mishnah. 15 years old, Gemara. Pirkei Avot does not spell out what women have to learn. Nowadays, for a girl, it's basically the same kind of thing. Or comparable. But so in other words, one is slowly going to more and more difficult things, and it'll be after 15, maybe it'll be 20, when you start learning the inner dimension of Torah, according to that list, which seems to move in jumps of 5 years. And then it says in brackets, very interesting bracket about this. Techein hu al derech ha-ragil, this is how it was generally, lifnei itgabrut choshech ha-galut, before the strengthening of the darkness of exile. V'rak la'achre itgabrut choshech ha-galut, only after the strengthening of the darkness of exile, hitkinu, it was established, la'atchil b'limud pnimiyut ha-Torah b'gil mukdam yoter, that one should, it was established to start studying the inner dimension of Torah much earlier. As is explained in a number of places, and there are a couple of references at the bottom, note 8 and note 9. One is where it speaks about even younger than 6 years old, beginning to learn a kind of a spiritual perspective on life. And, you know, just in discussion with a child, doesn't mean you're learning complicated ma'amarim with a 6-year-old, but in fact children are very receptive to a spiritual dimension, but just to speak in a spiritual way about life and help to communicate that. And the other footnote, footnote 9, it speaks about before bar mitzvah, learning, actually learning texts, Hasidic texts, Tanya, a bar mitzvah boy in Chabad, one of the things he does for his bar mitzvah is say a discourse. He says a beautiful maimah about the meaning of tefillin, the spiritual meaning of wearing tefillin. So a bar mitzvah boy starts wearing tefillin and he says a maimah, you remember, which explains the meaning of tefillin. So, of course, to learn that, he's had to learn other things as well. And so the study in a spiritual way begins before bar mitzvah. But then, in that place, which is quoted here in Likutei Sichot, the Rebbe comments, that's as regards the learning of Hasidut. But the varamkeit, the warmth of Hasidism, the inspiration of Hasidism, even a little child is exposed to that, you know. That's the warmth of a Hasidic atmosphere, of Pnimiyut HaTorah. So, one second. Let's move on to line 25 in the actual text. V'chein meforash gam b'yilchot Talmud Torah l'admor hazaken, so also is expressed clearly in the laws of Talmud Torah, the laws of Torah study by Rabbi Shneur Zalman. That was the first book written by Rabbi Shneur Zalman. A very interesting collection of all the laws from the Talmud and previous writers, the Rambam and others, about what are the actual laws of studying Torah. Shahatchalat ha-limudim k'tanim be'ofen shetzalich l'chupam. The describing the process of study, one often has to persuade, cajole, bribe a little child or a young person to study. Shazeu in yam shel milchama. It's a kind of little battle. It's a battle. The way the beginning of study can be a battle. Of course, if you're a clever teacher, the child doesn't realize it's a battle. You're presenting it all in a positive way and in a beauty, and you give him sweets and this and that and an outing and. So it's an enjoyable thing, but you're actually battling with a little animal soul which was much rather play in the garden or go on his bicycle or go swimming or this or that than sitting and studying, whatever it might be. So that is the concept of battle. Valderech zu ze hiklalut avoda, and in general, this is the whole nature of service of God, that it's ba'ofen dit kafya. It's in a way, this is page Vav now. In a way of itkafya. Itkafya means quelling oneself, controlling oneself. Shekofet atzmo, the person forces himself la'asot chetzon aviv shebeshamayim, to fulfill the will of our Father in heaven, b'limud Torah, in study of Torah, v'kiyum mitzvotav, and keeping his mitzvah. Person says, oh, I still need to study a little bit of Chumash with Rashi before I go to sleep, but I'm so tired, maybe I'll just go to sleep. No, I'm going to study the Chumash with Rashi before I go to sleep. That's Walt Whitman, the American poet, much beloved by a certain Lubavitcher I know, who had to learn him by heart in school. So he says in one of his poems, I have miles to go before I sleep, and promises to keep. Something like that. It's like he sees, in the poem, he sees a comfortable place that he could just go, turn off the roads, go to this comfortable little cottage, which is so inviting, and he'll be able to sleep. But no, he's got promises to keep, and miles to go before I sleep. So that's really, you know, that kfiya, to force oneself. That's yitkafya. Omnam, however, tachlit shleimut avoda, but the real goal of the wholeness of service of Hashem is in a different way. He lavo lematzav shel pediya b'shalom, is to come to a situation of redemption in peace. Not with a war, but in peace. That means the person, he or her, brings their animal soul lamatzav kazeh, to such a situation. She'ein tzorech lamilchama. There is no need for battle. Mishum shegam hanefesh habamid, because the animal soul as well also ovedet et Hashem, it wants to serve Hashem, it does serve Hashem. Kamaima, as it says, b'chol levavcha, it says in the Talmud. In the Shema we say, with all your heart. You should love God with all your heart. B'chol levavcha. So the Talmud is, as it were, responding to the question, why does it say levavcha and not libcha? Because it means a double heart. B'shnei yitzelecha. Yetzer hatov, the good desire, and yetzer hara, the bad desire. The divine soul and the animal soul, both of them should serve Hashem. So in other words, the goal is Pada b'shalom, that we reach a place where there is peace and we have this sort of wholesome relationship with the divine, in which our animal soul itself wants to serve God. Now, whether this is a kind of a life's work concept, and that the, you know, the beginning and the middle of one's life is a battle, and towards later on one reaches this state of peace and serenity, or maybe it's every day, that every day there are these different, there's a dimension of challenge, and then somehow or other one faces the challenge, and then one comes through to a mode of inspiration, and when the person is inspired, then the animal soul does not object or even helps in one's service of Hashem. And becoming inspired is something that we have the opportunity to do every single day. Every day before we start davening, saying the morning prayers, we have the opportunity to start thinking about the nature of God and the nature of existence, study a bit of Tanya, study a bit of a discourse. And then when we start davening, it's not, it might start off as kfiya, as forcing ourselves, but it becomes something which is joyful, which is inspired, which is luminous. V'hine. Okay. So this is the concept for each one of us, serving Hashem, to reach this point of peace. Now it's interesting, there's a chap called Foxbrunner who wrote a book about Rabbi Shneur Zalman called Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Ladi. And he contrasts in the introduction to this book, he contrasts, it was his PhD, and he published it as a book. He contrasts the system of Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Chaban with the Greeks, the Haftarah. He says the Greeks try to attain serenity. Rabbi Shneur Zalman, in general, is not trying to attain serenity. He's teaching a path of a more refined kind of struggle. You know, the way that he is reading Rabbi Shneur Zalman is this struggle dimension. And it's possible to take the teachings in Tanya and Rabbi Shneur Zalman's teachings, one can take that aspect of them where there is tension. There's always a kind of a tension to fulfill God's will, and there's so many different challenges. It's interesting that this theme of the Rebbe, which he's expressed many times, you see the difference between the Rebbe's discourse and the Mittler Rebbe's discourse. The Mittler Rebbe is the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, the one who was released in 1826 and who wrote that original discourse, Pada B'Shalom. Rabbi Dov Be'er, as far as I understand, like just looking briefly over his discourse tonight, which like I've studied, you know, previously years ago, but in detail, but for him, the only one who attains peace is the tzaddik, the really great person. As indeed it says in Tanya, that there's the animal soul and the divine soul, and the tzaddik achieves a situation that the animal soul is either completely neutralized or is transformed into good, but that's like an incredibly rare situation. The beinoni, the intermediate person in Tanya, who's a very, very exalted person, who keeps all the mitzvot in the most wonderful, meticulous way and studies Torah the whole time, and is really an incredibly inspiring person, the beinoni, the intermediate person, can be beset by all kinds of negative thoughts in his mind, which are saying bad things to him, and he has to like keep battling. It's like, you know, driving a car in the heavy rain or something, and you can't see properly. And the beinoni, he doggedly goes ahead, and you know, he never crashes into anything. He never lets go of the wheel. Whereas in Tanya, the tzaddik has transformed the situation. Suddenly, it's a peaceful journey. Yeah, that's nice. A boat sailing with a sail. Since I'm not a sailor, I think that's peaceful. If I were a sailor, I'd know how difficult that is. So, the Rebbe's teaching brings it into our lap. We are the ones who have to go from one level to another level, and there's dimension of war and battle, and there's also the concept of peace. So he is bringing it more into our into our possibility. So that's what the Rebbe is doing with this discourse. This discourse is one of probably 15 or 20 similar discourses each year. The Rebbe said, almost each year, the Rebbe said a discourse relating to this. So this is from 1983, and there was one 1984.
Pada B'Shalom.
Pada B'Shalom, yeah. On this day, either now or for Yud Tet Kislev, or for the 19th of Kislev, next week. But always, but very often, this theme. And the concept of achieving this peace between conflicting dimensions. And that we can achieve peace. Sometimes it's expressed in political terms, you know, like Israel and the nations. And the ultimate peace is Gam Oivav Yashlim Ito. His enemies make peace with him. that instead of anger, instead of hatred, there's love. It's not a matter of conquest. That's the concept of Parda B'Shalom. What's the problem?
Forgot my phone.
Oh.
Or lost it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you want to... Okay. So here, the Parda B'Shalom is the redeeming in peace, the battle between the animal soul and the divine soul. And that somehow or other, we are able to achieve that in some sense. And I would say it's through the process of inspiration. Through the process of being inspired, through Hasidic teaching, that's how I understand it, my primitive way. Through the process of being inspired by Hasidic teaching, or similar, the person comes at that, it might not be a very lasting state. But it's a point of wholeness in comparative terms. It's not really whole because the person still has all kinds of flaws. There's the famous story of the Rambam and the rival doctor. The Rambam was a doctor in Egypt in the 12th century. And there were rival doctors who were always non-Jewish doctors, who were always trying to show how they're cleverer than him. So one of them trained a lot of cats that the cat should behave like a waiter in a restaurant or in a whatever the 12th century Egyptian version of a restaurant. Maybe not like a restaurant today. And the Talmud speaks about the waiters at a banquet. So the cats are now the waiters. They walk around with a cloth over their arm and they bring the bowl of food. You know, it's wonderful. They're really so well trained. And the Sultan says to the Rambam, "No, Moshe Ben Maimon, you see this? Can you do a thing like that?" You know, that's the whole point, to show up the Rambam that he can't do such a thing. So the Rambam looks at the cats and he takes out of its pocket a mouse and he throws it down, and immediately all the cats forget about being waiters and so on. They jump on the mouse. They revert to being cats. So the point is, we might get inspired by Hasidic teachings or other beautiful spiritual things, a Hasidic Verbrengen, singing, beautiful melody. We've still got the cat inside us, and if it just needs the right mouse so we have to be able to watch that. But in comparative terms, we're also able to get a little bit of this Parda B'Shalom Nafshi, this redeeming in peace my soul. Now the background to redeeming in peace my soul is the background from the Book of Psalms, which is by King David, and the background in the life of King David. So, in other words, well, let's read it inside. We're up to line 7 on page Vav. Yeshua? Ken? Vehinein, behold, hanetinat koach linyan haptir b'shalom. The empowerment. Now, this word, netinat koach, is a tremendously important word. Something gives us the power to achieve whatever it is that we achieve. There's always a netinat koach, something giving us that strength. And the strength comes from Hashem, from the Torah, from a mitzvah that we've done, from learning Torah, from a Rebbe, from a tzaddik, from King David. In this case, it's from King David. So the empowerment to this concept of being redeemed in peace, shebavodat kol echad v'achat, which is in the service of each individual, he al yedei ha'ptia b'shalom sh'hayta b'fam ha'rishona, is like the redemption in peace originally, shal zeh ne'emar pasuk zeh, about which this verse is said, the Parda B'Shalom Nafshi, he redeemed in peace my soul, in Psalm 55. This verse was said by King David, shegam tchilat avodato hayta ba'ofen shel milchama. Also in his case, his service, the beginning of his service, was in a way of battle. V'ad shenem abo, until it said about him, Dam larov shafachta, God said to him, you've shed a lot of blood, milchamot kipshutan, literally battles, wars, killing people. Shezem more gam al inyan ha-milchama. Now, this also refers to a spiritual battle. Ba'ofen beru ha'olam beruchniyot. Sifting the world in spiritual terms. The world has many problematic aspects, and the task of the Jewish people is to sift through these problematic aspects. We confront difficulties, and by our rising to the challenge of those difficulties, we are achieving Biru HaOlam. We are sifting through, we're transforming the world in spiritual terms. And later on, Basof Yamav, at the end of King David's life, he gila ofen shul padaba shalom. He reached this quality of being redeemed in peace. Ubeze gufa, and in that category itself, in a shleimut shalom begalui, the complete wholeness of peace in a revealed way, haitabi bimei shloma benoshul David, came in the days of King Solomon, David's son. Shenikcha Shlomo al Shem HaShalom. His name Shlomo indicates peace. Sha'az higiyu nitzutzei hakdusha mikol ha'olam. Because then in King Solomon's time, when he built the temple, and people would come from all over the world to see the temple, like Malkat Sheva, the Queen of Sheba, these were sparks of holiness coming from all around the world, but often shel shalom, in a peaceful way. And as we see literally, the Vayeshiv Shlomo al Kisei Hashem, King Solomon sat on the throne of God, Yerushalayim Yakodesh, in Jerusalem, the sacred city, Ve'eviu al Shlomo avanim tovot v'chelim yikarim, and from the surrounding countries they brought to King Solomon precious stones and precious vessels. So this is being interpreted also in spiritual terms. The precious stones, the precious vessels, these are the spiritual gathering which was taking place of the nations around through this quality of peace with the temple that he had built. V'zeo gam mashal dor David v'shlomo ne'emar, and that's why for the generation of King David and Solomon, ne'emar shehayu b'vchinat kaim asir b'shlomuta. It says about them, note 15 gives the reference in the Midrash, in Shemot Rabbah, in Midrash Rabbah, the moon was full. Why? Mishum shehem hayu dor yudalet v'dor tetvav l'Avraham. They were the 14th and the 50th and the 15th generation after Abraham. King David and King Solomon. And so that is like the moon being full in the sky. And that was the messianic moment, that was the cosmic moment in King Solomon's rule, and that's why he built the temple and the whole sense of the possibility of unity in a wonderful way. And since that is about King Solomon, you can see that it also relates to David. It was King David who began the whole idea of building the temple. Everything was done in a way that God communicated to King David. Because the nature of the temple is to bring peace to the world. The actual building was through Solomon, but the lead up to the building, King David bought the place, the granary that belonged to Aravna, King David bought it, that was going to be the site of the temple. So King David really prepared the time of the temple. So in other words, it was King David who went through this process of battle and then reached the epoch of peace. And that fact that happened to King David, that empowers us to do the same thing. Whether in the course of our lives, like taking our lives as a whole, sometimes it seems that the beginning of our life or the middle of our life has just been a battle. And now, through Torah, Mitzvot, and the inspiration of Torah, we're going to come to a new domain of peace and of wholeness and of wholesomeness. Or it could be that it's a battle which happens every day, and the next morning we wake up, we're back at square one. But maybe we are a little bit higher somehow. But certainly just the process of getting up and getting out of bed is the beginning of a new battle, and facing a new day, and the beginning of making our tefillah something meaningful instead of just saying the words. That's always a challenge which faces everyone, that when they start saying brachot in the morning, it should be with a bren, it should be with a fire, it shouldn't just be like an old record, if you remember what records were, you know, an old scratched record, you know, but it should be with. Okay, so that is the concept of Padaba Shalom. Now, the second part of the verse is, Ki b'rabim hayu imadi, u'mamshich achakach, it continues afterwards, Ki b'rabim hayu imadi, because there were many who were with me. U'mamshich b'zeh b'dibu amatchil Padaba Shalom anal. Now, in the an earlier version of this discourse said by the previous Rebbe, it asked the question, I think it's, or maybe it's in the Mittler Rebbe's discourse. The lechore soter sefer l'reisha. It seems a contradiction. The rabbim betoch rabbim davka, v'hayu imadi l'shon yachid davka. Rabbim suggests many. I was with the many. Imadi means I was alone. Where's the many? Am I among many or am I alone? It's like there's an ambiguity here. Or Mavaibazen, he explains there, the resolution of the question is very simple. The fact that he as an individual is revealed in, is redeemed in peace, who al yedei siyua shel rabim, is through the help of the many. Now that's a very interesting thing, the help of the many. And there are various ways in which we are helped by the many. Let's just see if he doesn't add any points over here. So it's as explained there in the discourse, various aspects of this. I must confess I didn't manage to, I looked at the discourse, I didn't manage to I forgot to look for this particular aspect of it. But I mean, there are a number of different ways of understanding this. One of the Padaba Shalom Ma'amarim, one of the discourses, Padaba Shalom, speaks about davening with a minion. Davening with a minion is a very interesting thing. There's the individual who is praying to God, but he's with 10 people, and the fact of being with a minyan, that is something which is helping him. And there are other ways in which we link with others, but I can't remember what it actually says in the original discourse which he's referring to him. V'yesh lo hosif b'zeh, and one can add that tachlit ha-shleimut hi shegam ha-rabim atzmam yavo achakach v'matzav shel shalom. The many themselves will ultimately come to peace as well, like we say about b'chol levavcha b'shnei yitzlecha. So in other words, there's a multiplicity around one, and a multiplicity inside one. And through this multiplicity, we come to the redemption in peace. And through the fact that each one of us as an individual comes to the redemption in peace, that leads to the multiple dimensions themselves to come to peace as well. V'zeu padav shalom nafshi mikchavni. That's why he redeemed in peace my soul in the battle that was around me. Ki b'rabim hayu imadi, because of the many who were with me. D'tchilat avodato hu b'ofen shel milchama d'tkafya. The beginning of one's service is a battle of self-control. Then one comes to the wholeness of service, being redeemed in peace, as it was in the time of King Solomon, and in this itself, in a tachlit hashleimut shalom, the goal of this peace will be in the future, through Mashiach, Kashed ruach atuma avir min haaretz, when the spirit of impurity will be removed from the earth, v'yitbatel kol inyan ha-melchama, and everything to do with battle, with war, will disappear, v'yeh shalom ba'ofen shel shleimut, and then it will be real peace. So in other words, that's the broadest canvas of seeing this struggle. Battle is the time of Galut, and ultimately there will be the peace of the time of Mashiach. Now, so there we are seeing the way in which, on the one hand, there's the broad canvas of Galut versus Mashiach, exile and the time of Mashiach. On the other hand, there's the time of a person's life, going through one's life and then coming to a more peaceful goal at a further stage. Or there is every day of one's life, this kind of battle dimension, and then finding the inspiration where the multitude of things, the multiplicities in one's life, in some sense help one to achieve that peace. And that's the paradoxical dimension, that Barabim, there are many. You see, the way in which the Talmud understands this verse is that the enemies of King David, who were many, actually prayed for David's success. And so that is the Rabim who were together with David. So they were the followers of Avshalom. Avshalom was unfortunately, his own son whom he was fighting against. Or Avshalom was fighting against King David. But the followers of Avshalom themselves didn't like the idea that they were fighting against King David, the father of their leader. And so they themselves prayed for King David's success. So that's one of the explanations why it says that Kibarabim Hayuimabi, the many were the people you would expect to be the enemies. In terms of the individual life, there are qualities within us which might seem negative, but we can somehow utilize them, and we can turn them around, that they become a support in a positive way. They are the many. You see, the many, it's like the animal soul. The animal soul itself can become, instead of being an enemy, it becomes a partner in trying to achieve something positive. And the enthusiasm, the zest, the chayus, the life force with which a person approaches some task, very often it's the animal soul involved in that. Now, the animal soul could be chasing, you know, other animals. But instead, it's involved over here doing something good. So that's the help that we get from the multiplicity within ourselves. We get a help which brings about each one of us as an individual to this peace, this genuine peace, and then the animal soul itself is transformed. Okay, so now we're nearing the end. Line 16, V'hine kol hanal miyusad b'torat ba'al ha'gula. Now all this is based on the teachings of the Mittler Rebbe, the second Lubavitcher Rebbe. So yehi rotzon, may it be the will of God, shenizke lilmot torato shel ba'al ha'gula ba'ofen, that we should study his teachings in a way of yireh ki'ilu ba'al ha'shmua omed lenegdo. There's a saying in the Jerusalem Talmud that when one studies Torah, one should consider that the person who's teaching the Torah, who originally taught it, is standing there with one. It's an interesting concept, emphasized in the Talmud Yerushalmi in a few places, that one should imagine the teacher being there with one. And even more, it shouldn't only be as if, in fact, you know what, spiritually, when we study someone's Torah, that the teacher of that Torah is actually standing there, through the fact that we're learning his teaching. Now this is a beautiful statement. It says, you see these words, Ana Nafshik Tavit Yahavit. What are the Roshe, how do the Roshe Tevot, how do the initial letters of this phrase, what do they add up to? Ana Nafshik Tavit. you have it. What are the initial letters? Aleph, Nun, Kaf, Yud, Anochi. That's the first word of what famous Jewish text? 10 seconds to beat the clock. Yes, well done. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord your God who took you out of the land of Egypt. It's the Aseret HaDibrot. So the word Anochi, I, from the Ten Commandments, is Ana Nafshi K'tavit Yahavit. I, myself, I'm writing myself down and giving it to you. That's what God says to us in His Torah, that He's giving Himself to us. Now, this can then be transferred to sages who teach Torah. They are putting themselves in their Torah. Their essence is somehow going into the Torah. So therefore, when we learn their Torah, Shehichnis atzmo b'torato, the person who taught the Torah is putting himself into his Torah teaching. And so therefore, when we study that person's Torah, he's really there. Till, as it says in the book of Yeshaya, about the revival of the dead, they will wake up and sing, those who sleep in the dust. V'hu b'tocham, including the second Lubavitch Rebbe, as we learn in the Zohar and in various places, that the Tchiyat HaMeitim, the revival of the dead for great tzaddikim, will be immediately with the coming of Mashiach. They won't have to wait many years, as it says about other people, as the sages say in the Talmud. Moshe v'Aaron yimahem. An interesting discussion in the Talmud in Yuma, where it's talking about how we will know when Mashiach comes. Where exactly is the place of the altar, the mizbeach, in the temple? But I mean, if you look behind the kotel, you know, where exactly is the temple supposed to be? Where is the altar supposed to be? There's a very specific spot for that altar. And so the Talmud says, no problem. Moshe and Aaron will be there and they will explain where to put the altar. And so it's taken for granted. And so, Ad l'Moshe shebechol dor ador, till we come to the Moses of each generation, like great sages, like the second Lubavitch Rebbe, and that becomes a pu'ula nimshechet, a continuous process, ad sof kol adorot, till the end of all generations. And yehi rotzon, that there should be the pouring out, the bursting out, hafatzat hamayanot, the fountains of the inwardness of Torah should burst out chutza, outside, but often shall shleimut in a whole way, sheze yavi et hagula amitit v'ashleima, that will bring the true and complete redemption, v'nelech b'nigla v'nista, and we will go, whether in the revealed Torah, the concealed Torah, im kol anyanim shebipnimiut, all the things which are in the inwardness of the Torah, and so much so that the hidden dimension of Torah will be completely revealed. As it was long ago, last page now, this last little paragraph, at the time of the giving of the Torah, as mentioned often, that at the time of the giving of the Torah, what was revealed? The hidden dimension, the fire, the thunder, the sound of the shofar, the revealed dimension, which is the explanations of the Ten Commandments, that was a hidden thing. Because we were able to see with our physical eyes, we saw Ma'aseh Merkava, we saw the work of the Merkava. The Merkava is the chariot. The first chapter of Yechezkel, the first chapter of the book of Ezekiel, is an astounding mystical image. And the sages tell us that at the time of the giving of the Torah, we were all like prophets who were able to see that prophetic dimension of revelation of God. Whereas the halachic teachings at the time of Mount Sinai, the explanation of the Ten Commandments, that was only in general, and later on had to be explained through the 40 days and nights that Moses was on Mount Sinai. So through this, we should all be able to receive Mashiach, and there'll be Tchiyat HaMeitim, and the Mittler Rebbe, the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, and of course all the other Rebbeim will be among them, and all the great sages through the generations in Ba'atzeinu HaKadosha, in our sacred land of Yerushalayim, Eir HaKodesh, and of the Jerusalem, the sacred city, Ubaha HaKodesh, and the sacred mountain, the hill, the Ha'abayat, the hill of the Beit HaMikdash, Uba Beit HaMikdash itself, and in the temple, Bimheira B'yameinu Mamash, swiftly in our days. So therefore it ends on that eschatological note of the ultimate Padaba Shalom, the revealing in peace, that all the battle is resolved, and instead of the battle, Gam Oivav Yashlim Emor, his enemies also make peace, and pray that we should be able to achieve this unity with the revelation of God through the coming of Mashiach.